Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. It is a good Tuesday. Peter King is going to be with us in about 10 minutes from New York City. SI.com, senior NFL writer. The Monday morning quarterback, the best in the business nationally, editor-in-chief, talking about the Cardinals losing Chris Johnson and Andre Ellington and the impact there. I also want to talk to Peter about Brock Osweiler because, national view of the former Sun Devil and the job that he's doing up in Denver. There's been some people that have sent me notes about would the Cardinals be interested in Ray Rice, and I can't see that happening myself. I don't think that that's an option here with the injury to Chris Johnson. We'll get to that in a minute. But I will talk to Peter about Ray Rice, too. That's coming up here shortly. At about 10:35, Greg McElroy from the SEC Network, ESPN college football analyst, the national view of the college football playoff. Very excited to have Greg McElroy on board. His thoughts on the ASU and U of A seasons. Of course, his dad works over at ASU in the athletic front office. So Greg McElroy will be with us. You know, this weekend, let's just say for argument's sake, or actually for argument's sake, let's say North Carolina beats Clemson this weekend, and let's say that Alabama loses, which I can't see happening, but let's just say that it does. Then we would have mass chaos this weekend. I think as we sit here right now, the Final Four is pretty much set. Eric is actually back from his plane to Dallas. We were making fun of him yesterday because he was down watching TCU. To me, it seems like, E, that you're going to have Clemson and Alabama and Oklahoma and Michigan State or Iowa.
Michigan State.
And Michigan State will beat Iowa. But let's say Iowa beats Michigan State.
Okay.
Let's say Florida beats Alabama.
Okay.
Which I don't think is going to happen, but let's just say they did.
Okay.
And North Carolina beats Clemson.
Okay. Well, you definitely have...
We'd have chaos.
We'd have two Big Ten teams, because Ohio State would probably jump back in the mix, and we would have Iowa.
Iowa just doesn't roll off the tongue very well. Now,
don't get me started.
Stanford, and let's throw Stanford in there. Let's say Stanford beats USC, okay? So Stanford lost to Northwestern, and Northwestern won 10 games this year. Now, I understand it's a Big Ten winning 10 games. I understand that. But you, to me, you would have to look at Stanford. I would look at Stanford before I look at Iowa, but they are in the conference championship game, the Hawkeyes.
There is no dominant team this year. That's all through. We're into the early part of December, and it's unanimous, especially after watching Clemson struggle with a really bad South Carolina team.
Yep.
There is no dominant team. If Ohio State played all...
Alabama's the closest dominant team.
They're beatable, though. They're beatable. If they play a team and a team gets out in front of Alabama, are you going to trust that run-heavy offense to come back from a 21-point deficit? No.
But you don't see Stanford as any shot then at making it.
I don't think so. I guess how can you put a two-loss team in the Final Four?
Make it into the Final Four? That's and see, I believe Oklahoma's in. Do you agree with me that the Final Four should be set?
As of tonight, it's definitely set.
If tonight when they do their show, and for all intents and purposes, I know you've said, get back to me later. I don't care. Get back. So tonight I'm interested.
Oh, sure. I'm going to watch.
Okay. And so it should be Alabama, and it should be Clemson, and it should be Oklahoma, right?
Yeah, and it doesn't matter where you are in the top four. It makes no difference. It doesn't matter tonight if Oklahoma's first or third or fourth. You just need to be in the top four.
All right. We're going to talk to Greg McElroy about that. I think I've got to talk at some point, either today or tomorrow. We have the TV show tonight, so I might throw it in tonight's show. Arizona State and Arizona, for as bad as their seasons were, they're both going to a bowl game. And where's that bowl game going to be for ASU? I know that the Cactus Bowl, which is played, it's the one over Chase Field. And or is that the one down in Tucson? They have the Cactus Bowl and they have the Motel 6 Bowl.
Well, it is. The Cactus Bowl is the Motel 6
Presented by
the
Motel 6?
That's
okay,
correct.
So we want to say, but there's a bowl game in Tucson this year.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's called the Tucson Bowl, but it's brought to you by somebody.
Yeah. I like that. It's brought to you by somebody.
You know how it goes. I mean, the Inside Bowl became the Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl, which is now the Tom Bodette Bowl. So who knows? Bowl games are bowl games.
But Arizona State going to Chase Field to play either the winner of San Diego State Air Force.
Woo! Oh, the players will be thrilled.
Okay.
Where are we going for our bowl trip? Downtown Phoenix.
Downtown Phoenix. We take the light rail down.
Maybe they can stay at the on campus before the game instead of staying at a hotel. They can just stay on the ASU downtown campus.
The media hotel or the team hotel.
No, the kids will be gone for winter
the
break.
Dorm room.
Yeah, exactly. Todd Graham, we're going to bond. This is a good bonding experience for our team.
We have those 15 practices.
We're going back to Arizona State's roots and staying in dorms.
So yesterday, I was with a group of old guard, big cigar Sun Devils. And man, they were getting mad at me because I wasn't sitting there saying that this was a successful season. And they're like, we're going to a bowl game. We beat U of A. And you just want to put your head in your hands and just bang your head against anything when people say this was a successful season.
That's so 2008.
Oh, no, it's 1990. It's 1978. It was just and they were really getting angry with me. They were getting really mad at me. They wanted me to stay and keep talking about my view on some things. And I said, I've given you my view. This has been a bitterly disappointing year. And just because you write a check that has a decimal point way down the line, it does give you the right to have an opinion. It does give you the right to be supportive. But gosh almighty, anybody who's not going to look in the mirror and say, you guys were picked to go to the college football playoff by Kirk Herbstreit. Now, it's one guy at ESPN. But there were several people nationally, if they were to go back and pull out their, here's my preseason prognostication, there were several people that had ASU in their Final Four. And so to sit there and tell me it's a great year and that I'm being too negative, you guys just, you don't get it. And I'll still go back. Anyways, The Jahlil Okafor story is really interesting to me. We're going to get into that a little bit on today's show. So just off the top, tonight the Lakers play the Sixers. And you're saying, Brad, you're in Phoenix. You're supposed to be talking about the Suns in Brooklyn. I don't really care tonight about the Suns in Brooklyn in early December. But I do care about the Lakers at Philadelphia for a couple of reasons. Kobe Bryant, he's making his last lap. This will be his final game in Philly. He grew up in Philly. Philly is 0-18. Philly is taking the approach that we're going to have a bunch of kids and grow them. They have their oldest player is 24 years of age. The oldest player. They spent their first round pick on Jahlil Okafor, who was caught using a fake ID to get into a bar because he's not even 21 yet. He got in a fight on the street with some fans. He was arrested for driving 108 miles per hour on a Philadelphia bridge. The fight was at a Boston nightclub last week. And so the Sixers have now decided to hire a security guard with him. So they've got to babysit him. There's no infrastructure there. Like you look at the kid from Kentucky that went up to Minnesota and Kevin Garnett is sitting there. There's nothing there with Philadelphia. So they've taken a very talented player in Okafor at Duke last year and just thrown him to the wolves. So that it's really interesting to me on both sides. And then Golden State last night. Yeah, I was that guy watching the Ravens and Browns because I had the Ravens defense and the guy I was playing had Duke Johnson for Cleveland. And I'm one of those losers last night that had no life, that was watching that slop of a game that actually ended pretty funny. But I did see the end of the Warriors game too, which made my night complete. All right, Peter King is standing by via Skype. Peter will join us next, and then we'll talk with Greg McElroy from the SEC Network. I'm Brad Sussmat, sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic. AZ Central Sports Television show is tonight on Fox Sports Arizona, 6, 10, 1, 7 a.m. tomorrow morning for airing. Stay with us.
Like our Facebook fan page for unique Arizona sports content from the high schools to the pros. Facebook.com/sports360az.
Time now to catch up with Peter King. As always, the MMQB, Sports Illustrated, Sunday Night Football on NBC. And actually, before I even get to Peter, if you go to the MMQB, there's a story that one of his people put together. Emily Kaplan wrote about high school football at a crossroads. we aspire here at Sports 360 AZ to do a lot on the high school, college, and pro scene around the state. And this story that they put up on the MMQB is about Castile High School right here in our own backyard. So very good reading. It's over on the MMQB. Peter joins us from New York City. All right. So there's panic in the streets out here. They didn't play well, they being the Cardinals against the 49ers. But more importantly, they lose Chris Johnson and Andre Ellington has turf toe. Are these becoming concerns to you, Peter, for the Cardinals in January?
Well, I think the big question becomes how long do you lose players for and what can you do behind them? I've always been in the school of the running back is, and again, this is the wrong impression to give, and I do not want to give this impression at all. But I've always been under the impression that the running back position is the easiest of all positions on the field to replace and to remain at a, say, a B level. And by that, I mean, I think that if you lose your left tackle, if you lose your right tackle, and you're not happy with the depth on your roster, that is a bigger problem than losing a running back, even a running back who currently is fourth in the NFL in rushing. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example. When the Kansas City Chiefs earlier this year, I believe week five, lost Jamaal Charles for the year, they weren't playing well anyway. And so they lose Jamaal Charles for the year with an ACL. So they basically have played without Jamaal Charles for the last 6 weeks. Well, the Kansas City Chiefs in the last 6 weeks have resuscitated their season. They've won five of their last six, and they've done it with running backs who you've never heard of. Mm. Charkandrick West was the first one. Then he got banged up, and now I forget his first name. Ware is running the ball, and the last 2 weeks he's rushed for 210 yards. And so, look, if you have a good offensive line, and Arizona's offensive line is certainly improved, and you're committed to being a good run team, I do not think losing even two good running backs is a death knell for your team. I mean, look, there's no question in my mind now that you have to start looking at guys who have been underachievers for your team. I mean, I think Johnson and Taylor really have to step up now, and then we'll see what happens. But at least, Brad, at least it's not like you're going to the waiver wire and picking up guys who you have to come in and learn a system. And from knowing a little bit about how the Cardinals operate in terms of their game plan, mm-hmm. they have a complex and deep game plan every week. And so what is essential to them is to have guys who they can just plug in who already know what they're doing. And at the very least, that's what they have right now.
Yeah, and out here, I'm getting fans that are going as far as saying, well, why don't they explore Ray Rice? And let me just ask you this in general. I don't think that's a possibility here at all, but do you think he'll ever get back into the league, Peter?
You know what, Brad, I'll tell you what. I am very surprised that he didn't end up in somebody's camp this year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the longer the year goes on, unless there is just an absolute, there's 20 injuries at the running back position, it's hard for me to imagine that he would come in this year. But, I'm mind-boggled why you wouldn't bring him in, especially when you have a 90-man roster, in training camp. You have all these spots that you can just look at a guy. You can look at Ray Rice for 5 weeks. That's what I couldn't really figure out why one team didn't do it this year. But as for, the Cardinals, the Cardinals obviously had their own problems in the last couple of years with domestic violence.
Yes, they did.
So they're one of those teams where you say, they've already sort of done their penance here with this particular social ill. And so I would be surprised too if they were to give him a call. But I would not object at all. Whoever brings him in my opinion, is bringing in a man who is totally repentant and who, in my opinion, we live in America. We're a country of second chances, and he certainly deserves one.
A lot of fans here that are Arizona State fans. It saw Brock Osweiler for a short period of time, so there's a huge amount of interest in his early success in Denver. What strikes you most about the Brock Osweiler story in Denver, Peter?
You know, the other night after their game, I had a lengthy conversation with Evan Mathis, the guard who is new to the Broncos this year. And so I just asked him, I said, look, I'm not there. Take me into your practices. Take me into what it's like to be around this guy. And he goes, this is a backup quarterback who always prepared like a starting quarterback. In part because, and look, Evan Mathis doesn't know this because he just got there. But if you're on a team with Peyton Manning, then you better have a good work ethic or you're going to be totally embarrassed. And this guy has a good work ethic. And he said the great thing about him when he was put into the starting lineup, he worked exactly the same as when he was not a starter. So everybody on the team just said, well, it's next guy up. And just remember this, Brad. On Wednesdays every week, Gary Kubiak was sitting Peyton Manning. Manning was not practicing on Wednesday anyway. So Osweiler every Wednesday was running the base offense with the ones. They got a chance to know him. He got a chance to throw a lot of balls to Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas. And look, I think that that was a different night the other night in terms of the weather. You know, it was snowy. It was windy. So it wasn't a great night to throw the ball. You know, his first game, he completed 74%. The other night, he completed, I think, 55%. And so I think he's probably going to land somewhere in the middle. I think he'll end up being in the mid-60s. But again, after that first game, Brad, I know the coaches, when they sat down and talked about it, they just said, you know, the big difference, you know, in this game versus our other games is we didn't turn it over. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, you don't like to pick on Peyton Manning. He's a legend. But in the first nine starts, he started every game. He threw at least one interception. I mean, he threw 17 interceptions, Brad. And when you don't have a great arm and you can't make a lot of plays happen, you know, with your deep arm and you can't make anything happen running the ball, if you're turning it over, you're going to be a liability. And that's one of the reasons why I think it isn't just Peyton Manning's feet right now. You know, the heel injury he has, the plantar fascia problem. Mm-hmm. And it isn't his ribs. I think until he illustrates that he can put a little more on the football, that he's not just throwing an 81-mile-an-hour fastball that's not going to get people out in single A, I think until he demonstrates that he can put something on the ball, I think the Broncos are probably going to stay with Osweiler.
I appreciate your time and your insight as always, Peter. We'll talk next week. Thanks.
All the best, Brad. Thank you.
Greg McElroy joins us now for a couple of minutes. SEC Network, ESPN college football analyst. You can also hear him on Sirius XM, as I do from time to time on my morning drive in. He joins us for a couple of minutes. I want to get into a whole bunch of things. Let's go right off the top. We just saw Arizona State, Greg, come up short against California. What'd you make out of Jared Goff this year and an NFL potential? We're here in Arizona. They've got to find a replacement for Carson Palmer eventually. What'd you make out of Jared Goff first and foremost?
Well, first of all, with Arizona being 9-2, I'm not sure I don't think Goff's going to be available by the time Arizona's picking. So I do think that he has big time talent, and I think he has strong upside. Obviously, you always get a little bit concerned with how that type of offense and how it's going to translate to the next level. However, with so many NFL teams incorporating some of those spread aspects, I would assume he'd be a natural transition. A lot of people want to draw comparisons to Aaron Rodgers. I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't even come close to doing that. However, though, I do think in a relatively weak quarterback class, he probably is the best option for a team that has to have one. So I would expect San Francisco to look long and hard at that end, possibly at the top of the draft, or maybe one of the other quarterback-needy teams.
What do you make out of the Sun Devils this year? I know your dad's there, so I'm not asking you to tread lightly, but you know, what'd you make out of the Sun Devils season?
Well, it was a disappointing year. I mean, I don't think anyone else can phrase it any different. Yeah, they had a couple tough games. They couldn't hang on the lead. The defense wasn't nearly as good as what people assumed. I think they definitely, even though Lucien did have his moments at wide receiver, they really missed Jalen Strong and the consistent presence he brought. It was a tough season, and starting with week one when their offensive line got completely destroyed by a pretty good front four by Texas A&M, and that clearly appeared to be a real issue for them a majority of the season. And you know, that's something they're going to have to address going forward, because obviously the teams in the Pac-12 South, with the depth and the strength of the conference, you just can't have your B game. I mean, if you have your B game, you're going to lose. The conference is just too tough. So a disappointing season, but it's something that you would assume that Todd Graham and company will be able to bounce back from with relative ease, considering the direction and the facilities and the upgrades that they have that are coming very soon to Tempe.
Greg McElroy with us, SEC Network, ESPN college football analyst, and, of course, Sirius XM. Further south, Rich Rod's name has been all over the place for coaching openings, including South Carolina, Georgia, Miami of Florida. Can you envision a scenario where he lands at any of those open jobs, Greg?
Probably not South Carolina or Miami or any of those jobs. I did think he was a legitimate contender at Virginia Tech, but obviously Justin Fuente from Memphis just took that job. So a little surprised, actually, that job got closed as quick as it was. I had heard Rich Rod's name connected to it. Obviously, it makes sense, too, considering what you're looking at in his proximity, having coached at West Virginia, played at West Virginia, been at West Virginia. So it made sense that would be a place that he would potentially look. But I don't know if he would be a real option at any of those jobs. I think it might be the next round if, in fact, some Power 5 teams were to lose their head coach to those very desirable destinations. So I think a place to keep an eye on is Oklahoma State. Mike Gundy obviously has had an unbelievable year. A big turnaround, has done an incredible job at Stillwater, but you keep hearing his name pop up as a possible candidate in some of these jobs, just because I think that there was at one point or another some disagreements between him and maybe the athletic department. So I'd be pretty interested to see if, in fact, he decides to go, since there are so many compelling openings out there, and whether or not Rich Rod might be interested in the job like that in the Big 12.
Okay, so let's switch then to the national scene. The Final Four, in your mind, is it pretty well set?
Yes. I mean, it's essentially done. If you look at it, I think Alabama wins out there in. Clemson wins out therein, both of which are pretty heavy favorites. I believe Clemson's at about 6.5. Bama's laying 17.5 against the 10-2 Florida team.
Wow.
But a 10-2 Florida team that's really regressed. So It's definitely not your normal 10-2 football team. It's the 10-2 football team that's lost their quarterback. They're really reeling offensively, and really I think they just don't have as much depth as some of the other teams they've been playing against over the last 6 weeks of the season. So I do think that at some point Florida will challenge, just because of Jim McElwain's familiarity with Nick Saban after having been on staff. They'll be in it, I believe, for a quarter or two, but then Alabama's depth will just take over the football game. So Alabama controls Sun Destiny. They're more than likely going to be in. Clemson's in. Winner of the Big Ten Championship is in between Iowa and Michigan State. And then Oklahoma, I think, has already solidified their berth with the way they've performed since losing to Texas. So I assume, barring something completely unforeseen, those will be your four teams. And if there's a big upset along the way, then Stanford could potentially sneak in, or possibly, and I say possibly, and I think it's very unlikely, Ohio State could get another chance as well.
We want North Carolina and Florida and Iowa and USC to win this week. So just throw mass chaos out there this Saturday. That's all we're asking for.
As a radio host, that is what you want. You're absolutely right. You want chaos, and that's definitely something that you can pretty much guarantee. It's college football, so seldom is it ever chalk.
Appreciate the time of the visit, as always, Greg. Thanks.
You got it, buddy. Talk soon.
Greg McElroy with us, SEC Network, ESPN college football analyst, national view of the college football landscape. Good stuff there. Really like that. The Warriors won last night over on the NBA side. I don't know what's going to happen first. Is it going to be the Warriors winning? The Sixers winning a game, because Philadelphia is 0-18. Could you imagine being in a town? Like, we've had some sucky Suns teams here through the last few years. I mean, some teams are just horrendous. But 0-18, and they don't have anybody over the age of 24 right now. They have a guy who's turning 25 later this month. I mean, they've got nothing going on in Philly. And then you have the Warriors on the other side. You know, they're sitting there at 18-0. They won again last night, and they had to do it in dramatic fashion against Utah. The Suns put up very little fight on Friday. I don't know how many of you were around for the Thanksgiving holiday, but I did watch from out on the coast. And it was like going into a sword fight with a piece of spaghetti if you're the Suns. They're not even on the same zip code, area code, continent as the Warriors. The Warriors are that good. But 18-0, I don't know if there's pressure that builds on a team like that, or if these guys have played for so many years and won so many games on the club scene. If they just continue to play and play and play, and guys like us say, okay, you're 20-0, you're 30-0, you're 40-0. But the game tonight to watch really is Philadelphia at 0-18 against the Lakers. So, like, Eric, if you've not seen much NBA. I think I've seen a little bit more in talking with you.
Outside of the Suns, I've watched very little.
So does...
Not by choice. I just been in the football mindset. So.
Lakers at Philly do anything for you tonight?
No, but I'll watch the highlights just because it'll be curious. I mean, that's Kobe's stomping ground, and he's a Philly guy, so...
And do you want to see if Philly can just go 0-82? I mean, they're at 0-18 right now.
They have to win at some point, right?
But see, that's why I want to... It's like a car crash. People bend their necks, unfortunately, at car crashes. It's not like watching... Like, last night, they're not 0-12, but Cleveland's pretty darn close. I mean, they're just awful. And the Ravens are so beat up. They've lost so many players. They're not very good. And I watched only because my fantasy football team was being impacted by it. But I still watched a bad game. Now, it's going to take a lot on a Tuesday night for me to sit and watch the Lakers at Philly. Maybe it's because I'm one of those guys that has seen Kobe for 20 years do his thing. And I know that the magnitude, it's not like his final game at Memphis or his final game at Atlanta.
Sure.
Or his final game at Minneapolis.
Toronto.
Right. Like Paula was telling me yesterday, she's never going to forgive for what he did off the court in Denver, in Colorado. So you know when he goes and plays his final game in Denver that stuff's going to be brought back up. That's part of the narrative of him in Denver.
Yeah, the NBA is going to miss Kobe Bryant. Not this year or last year's Kobe Bryant per se, but the greatness of Kobe Bryant, because we don't see the true greatness outside of maybe 5 to 10 players in the league that are like Kobe. I mean, you have the Steph Currys, the LeBrons, and the Russell Westbrooks, and the Durants, but... Mm-hmm. The NBA needs those megastars. Not the Eric Bledsoe star, but the megastar. And Kobe, wherever he goes, is a megastar.
Is Eric Bledsoe a star?
He's a star.
I think he's a nice player.
He's not a superstar, but he's a star.
On the Suns.
He's not a superstar or a megastar.
He's a marquee on the Suns.
He's a third-tier star.
The Suns are coming to town with Eric Bledsoe. Well, but see, you're fortunate enough that you're old enough to have seen Jordan and Kobe. I'm fortunate enough that I was able to see Magic be drafted. I was a senior in high school I was in eighth grade when Magic was coming out. Okay. So I remember Magic Bird at Michigan State and Indiana State. I was so enthralled with that. And then I remember going to Magic's first game in San Diego and all those things with Magic and the HIV. And I can go right through all the stuff with Magic. And I can go right through all the stuff with Jordan. And I can go right through all the stuff with Kobe. I can't go through stuff with Oscar Robertson. I can just quote stats and all that stuff. I can't go back that far. And some of you can. Some of you are just now saying, boy, Steph Curry is the best player I've ever seen. He's pretty darn good, but he's different. There was an aura around Jordan. There was a definite aura around Magic. And those two guys had very good players around them. It wasn't like Jordan was all alone. He had his Batman and Robin deal
sure,
going.
Sure, same with Larry Bird.
And Larry Bird, right. Is there somebody that is young, that's a guard, that can get into Steph Curry, that when you see them play, is there a Steph Curry, somebody comparable? Like when the Cavs played Golden State last year in the finals, it wasn't like it was LeBron versus Steph every time down the court. So Dellavedova was out there trying to harass him. They had so many injuries in their backcourt.
J.R. Smith, they threw a bunch of guys.
Yeah, they had a bunch of guys because Kyrie Irving got hurt in the finals. So it's not like there's another guard that you can look at that at least I can look at. Tony Parker's a nice player, but Tony Parker's coming, and he's a star. I shouldn't say nice player. Eric Bledsoe's a nice player to me. Russell Westbrook. Okay, if it's Russell Westbrook against Steph Curry, that's probably as close as it gets right now. And so if you're 20, if you're in your late 20s, early 30s, Steph Curry's probably your benchmark. You didn't see Kobe. If you didn't see Kobe like the first 10, 12 years, like you were growing up and it's kind of like, hey, you watch him every now and then. I've seen this dude for 20 years do his thing, and it's been awesome. So it's not like watching Steve Nash at the end in that Kobe's dragging his body out there, but it's not like every play he's breaking down. Nash was breaking down at nearly every turn. Sports360AZ.com. AZ Central Sports. We partner with the Arizona Republic. I'm Brad Sussmat. So there's a bit of news around the Diamondbacks beyond Johnny Cueto. We talked about Cueto a little bit yesterday, and there's more details to that. Jordan Zimmermann signed with Detroit. I saw where the number was $110 million, but I don't know if that number changed. That number was floating around yesterday. And Cueto turned down $120 from the Diamondbacks reportedly. What I thought was interesting is the Diamondbacks got it out there yesterday that, yeah, they did have him in. And I think it was Nick Pecoro had some stuff over at AZ Central on this, that Derek was there and Tony La Russa was there and Dave Stewart was there. And so the Diamondbacks weren't afraid to say, yeah, we brought him in, which is interesting to me because sometimes teams don't want stuff out because if they don't land the guy, it's viewed as a failure. I've never believed that. You made a run at somebody and he didn't come here and you shouldn't be ashamed of that. And if you're going to get all caught up in what a few people on Twitter are saying, then you need to get out of the business. You just do. You can't let a social media thing just take you down the tubes because somebody didn't agree or a bunch of people didn't agree with what you had to say or do. Do your business. So they offered Cueto 6 years, $120 million, which looking at the market this year, because David Price is out there, it's very smart on the Diamondbacks' part, and I respect them for going after Johnny Cueto. I would love to see Johnny Cueto here in Arizona. But if David Price comes in and gets $200 million or gets $180 million, and Johnny Cueto signs with the Diamondbacks in early November for $120 million, Johnny Cueto is going to look at his agent and say, are you nuts? What were we thinking? We just lost $60 million potentially, or $70 million. So you have to let the market set itself. Go see what the guy who's going to get the most money, go see what he gets. And then come back. And I hope, though, that the Diamondbacks aren't being in a space of being used for leverage now. Sometimes organizations, and I think the Diamondbacks were that. You can go all the way back to when Bernie Williams was with the Yankees. Remember when Bernie Williams came in and the Diamondbacks brought him in and they took him in the locker room? I think there was even a guitar there waiting for him because he liked to play the guitar. And all he did was use the Diamondbacks to jack up the number. For years, the Cardinals were used as a place of go there, get an offer. They were just used. They were just that outpost in the NFL that franchises would go send their clients to with no intention of signing, but they'd get a better deal out of it. You can go all the way back to Joe Montana in Kansas City when Joe Montana came here. So I hope that's not the case. I think Johnny Cueto here would be terrific. He's won his title in Kansas City. Are the Diamondbacks really that far away from being a contender? If you're a starting pitcher, a top of the rotation starting pitcher, if you're a big horse, could you come to Arizona and be the guy or paired with another guy? Because I think they're two big horses away. With the new television contract kicking in, $120 million is not going to kill the budget. With Paul Goldschmidt's deal down the road, that's going to hurt the budget for all positions, but it's not going to kill it. They're going to have to save in other positions. But the window of opportunity for Goldschmidt, and I bring him into this equation, because he's going to want to see if he has a chance to win a title while he's here in Arizona and he's in his prime. Guys, it's great to have Goldie here, but if you think that he's going to be here for the rest of his career if they never win, you are kidding yourself. Oh, he's wired differently. No, every major leaguer is wired, and every guy who is at the top of their profession is wired into a couple things. Give me a big check, and if I have the big check, then let me go chase a title. So it's important for the Diamondbacks, it's imperative actually, for the Diamondbacks to send a message, not just to you, but to their super of superstar MVP candidate player over at first base, that we're not just sitting here jerking around. Sports360AZ.com. AZ Central Sports, we partner with the Arizona Republic. Plenty of content up on Sports360AZ.com right now. Thanks for being with us.